for them to pass. How will we respond to the case in a facility or the closure of a key supplier factory? Company will want out of any potential shortages that could the customer and any bad that could spook investors. And let me bad news, I say it repeatedly, I've said it for many years, bad news does not age well. So if there is bad news, we want to be transparent, we want to be upfront. For suppliers, we need to determine to what degree suppliers will be disrupted by a prolonged coronavirus outbreak. And are they being truthful about their ability to deal with disruptions? Is management looking at alternatives? Employees, for those that I just mentioned, the restaurants, the hotels, transport, are we talking to union representatives where there are unions, or just the employee base to keep them informed about the impact and how we work through this together? Are we going to take a short-term approach to it, or are we going to really partner with our team members to ensure that both the company and its employees survive this crisis? Customers, are we informing customers, or are we looking for other ways to deliver the service that does not involve a contact? Shareholders, are we communicating the company's assessment of the potential impact and how it is working in other areas to offset any potential negative fallout? And for our bankers, we saw yesterday where the Minister of Finance announced, working with BAT, that interest rates are going to be reduced on credit cards and I suspect other facilities. But we also have to sit with our bankers or at least communicate with them what we are seeing and what help you would need through this transition period. Again, we need to be transparent. So, for me, this is the kind of conversation we need to be having this morning. I hope I have set the tone and the groundwork for the conversation. And I will put it on to Marlon, who is in Barbados, and I know Barbados, of course, is very much dependent on tourism, and get from him how he sees the impact there and what boards can do in that situation. Marla, good morning. You're still on mute, Marla. Can we unmute Marla?
Good. It will give me some. First, let me say good morning to my fellow directors and members of the from CCGA. I also want to thank Kamala for inviting me to be part of this panel. When she first asked me, I said, "Well, you know, I'm not an expert in the area, but it seems like all of us are becoming experts." As we move along this event that we're going through, I think one of the main things that we need to consider as directors, and it was highlighted by Kamala at the beginning, is that boards need to ensure that they have oversight of what is going on in the company and monitoring and measuring management's performance and giving guidance to management as this event continues. The day-to-day operations of the company is that of corporate management. The board has oversight, and they must remember that. One of the things, one of the key responsibilities for management is assess risk one key responsibilities for the board, sorry, is assess risk and guide management in that assessment of the risk. Now, here in Barbados, I think our approach has been relatively balanced from a government perspective. We've had our first two cases. We were advised of our first two cases about 2 days ago, and we have been measured in our response to how we proceed. Only last night, it was announced that schools would be closed. The whole question of social isolation has come into play. But how I want to look at this thing is from a stock exchange perspective, and the fact that we have regulatory oversight over our listed companies and what listed companies are doing and companies in general are doing as it relates to how they manage the situation. And the thing is, from a board's perspective, we want to, there's certain questions or certain issues that the board has to look at. It has to look at the issue of the question of health and safety, not only for its staff, but the people who interact with the company. They need to look at the overall operational risk assessment for the company and how the management are dealing with those matters. The whole question of business continuity is a key factor that must be considered. And these things include, for example, employee and talent disruption, financial impact and liquidity to the company, because obviously if there's a fall off in business, the company has to be looking at these things. There needs to be a crisis management plan in place and what the company is doing as relates to crisis management. For example, do they have cross-functional teams in place? Is there a quick and decisive way of deploying resources when required? What are the contingency plans? For another key issue is the oversight of public reporting and disclosure requirements. We see in the US that the SEC has given some leeway for companies as we get a report deadline. I think they've extended it by 45 days, but there must be an explanation by the company as relates to how why they are requesting extensions. These are things that I myself have to interact with my regulator and see what their thoughts are and as it relates to reporting deadlines. The other issue that needs to be considered is how, you know, the whole question of reporting, financial statement reporting, quarterly reporting, etc. Compliance with the insider trading requirements and insider trading reporting. These are big issues. How do we deal with annual shareholder meetings? We see that ICSA, the Institute of Chartered Secretaries and Administrators in the UK, have put up guidance on how on what considerations should be made as it relates to hosting of annual general meetings. Do we do hybrid meetings? Are there contingencies in place for alternate venues? Will there be virtual meetings? How do we deal with, should we dispense with this whole question of refreshments after, simple things like that? In the event that meetings are postponed, what does the bylaws require? What does the rules of the stock exchange require? What does the regulatory framework require? These are considerations that must be taken into consideration by the board and the management as relates to the hosting of annual general meetings. Do we postpone it? How long can we postpone it? And then the whole question of shareholder relations, how do you communicate with your shareholders? How do you deal with those shareholders who are generally have questions and concerns as it relates to the strategic direction of the company? And then obviously, then one thing that we should also consider too is what are the opportunities available to the company in this particular time of crisis? These are some of the things that we need to consider as directors of boards, particularly as it relates to listed companies. I mean, we here at the Stock Exchange, I think it was an opportunity for boards and companies to build trust with their employees and trust with the investing public and trust with their customers and clients. These are because it allows them to communicate with them and let their constituency that they are taking this matter seriously and they're putting things in place. To guide the company and take care of the interests of all the stakeholders involved.
Thank you very much, Marlon. Julie, do you want to give us your perspective on CSG List with respect to your employees? I know that you are kind of at the center of this because you're a big supplier, so you are not obviously impacted, but you would have to put processes in place, and I've already, so you can share that with us as to how you are catered for your customers and what you're doing with your employees in this regard.
Thank you, Nigel. Thank you, everyone. Again, echoing congratulations for this forum to have this conversation. Delighted to have people from across the region to collaborate, which is vital in these unprecedented times. So thank you.
Thank you, Julie. May I just interrupt a second and ask you if you would mind putting on your camera, please?
I will put it on. But I do also think it might put a strain on my Wi-Fi at home. So if that is what happens, please let me know so I can unmute. Morning. So just to start, we are doing a lot in Massey. And I think one of the important messages that we are sending across our group, and it's being echoed from our board, is that the concept of the right answer and the right thing to do at this time may be a perspective that's difficult to follow. And why I say that is that we really want our leaders, our managers, our supervisors to have the confidence to do what they see is right for their area, for their business, at the time that they believe it's right. So we really are setting a tone of having empowerment and autonomous teams so that they can be proactive and responsible. So this may go against the grain of the control and the oversight that has traditionally been the mantra of boards or management, but we are encouraging people to move with alacrity and to put our employees and our customers and all stakeholders in the community at the forefront. And we are re-emphasizing as a board, just yesterday, our chairman, Robert Bermudez, and CEO Gervais Warner sent out a message to the entire group emphasizing the importance of the health of our employees and the responsible decision-making that we are expecting at all levels as we go through these unprecedented times. So lots is going on. In terms of the board also, we are looking at where responsible decision-making protocols can be delegated. And also if there's budget amendments that need to be done to support this empowerment and autonomy. Another thing we've done is we're very clear that all of our communication is via the HR community, because there has been quite an overload of communication. And while believing in good intent, thoroughness in checking the sources of the information and directing to government and responsible news sites, WHO, et cetera, we want to make sure that the HR community is where the communication out and also the listening to what is going on with employees is the focal point. Another thing is working from home and the protocols and the use of technology. And, you know, in times like this, there's been a spectrum. On the one hand, maybe even a week ago, what some companies wanted to do was thought by others as being a bit of an exaggerated response and overreaction. And 1 week later, we are here and we see that what may have been seen as overreaction a week ago was really, really great activity and proactivity. So we are also encouraging to err on the side of trust and containment. So how can we responsibly release the control and trust and expect that there will be different decisions and that there will be mistakes, but relying on our values, the values of the group, the values that are universal, those are the things that we're encouraging. With regard to our supply chains and our business continuity planning, which is something that we have prepared for, but even in our scenario planning, we are finding that none of them are right. No one could predict this. Understanding that whatever we may do as a scenario plan for next week or next month, it's not going to be right. It's not going to be perfect, but that's okay. We continue to do that. We continue to plan for various things and also encourage the peace of mind that if it doesn't turn out as exactly as we predict, that's okay. Let's just keep going. We're doing a lot with employee support programs through our EAP, and we're also looking at how our foundation can support in different ways. Just this week, our foundation was thinking, how can we put resources to online webinars, whether it's for our employees, our retirees, our customers, the general public, to give some sort of peace of mind and coping mechanism. So that's something else. The stress and the anxiety are real. And some of our most senior leaders who have gotten to these positions through having the right answer, knowing what to do all of the time, being very certain, having a plan, these may be the people that actually need the most support because this is unprecedented. Another thing we're doing is how do we care for the carers, the HR community, the senior leaders, the people on this call who are carrying the weight of the community and carrying the weight of the employees? How do we care for them? Setting up things like this where we can reach out to others and hear what's going on and connect as human beings. Knowing that we all have different styles, some are going to focus and cope best by getting down to the hard tasks of the supply chain management. Others will want to just have a chat and hear the funny stories about what's going on at home as we try to deal with children and husbands and wives and families and that type of thing. So I could talk for a lot longer, but let me stop there. Those are some of the immediate things that Massey is dealing with and the conversations that we're having at a senior leadership level and across the HR community.
Julie, thank you very much for that. That was spot on. Let me just ask one question of Julie before I bring it to Kamala. How are you dealing with the fake news kind of stuff? Because you're seeing some really crazy, stupid things, and it's almost like people want to be seen as the person to break the story. But the how should I put it? The judgment seems to be going out the window. So how are you dealing with that?
Good buffs with compassion. conversations to just let people see that, you know, that, I mean, many of us have come across the term oversharer recently, and we want to be the first and we want to let people know, and we know that there's this many cases now, and that's okay, and that's how some people are dealing with it, but having a little chat to say, you checked your source, where you really got that from? And actually going to the person that's doing it to say, I really know you mean well, but let's try and focus on WHO, whichever, you know, our government portals, redirect them to our government portals, and that's how I'm dealing with it.
Yeah. Great stuff. Thank you. You're dealing with it compassionately, which is good. Educate as opposed to berate. Great stuff. Kamla, you wanted to say something?
Yes, I just wanted to share that Michael Anisat indicated he will join us shortly, but he's dealing with a life situation now that really requires his attention at the port, but he will try his best to join us as soon as he can. And we do have Avia Lindy with us online now.
Avia, how are things in... Avia, you're in Guyana, right?
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I want to commend Kamla and the team for initiating this conference initiative. I think it's very much needed. I've learned a lot from what has been shared so far, and I am just going to give a little perspective on Guyana. Well, we are so much in the news, and you guys are aware of all the challenges we're facing, not just with COVID, but with our political situation. I have in front of me a document that was gazetted, and it was shared by the president of our country, where he gave authority to a few ministers to handle certain aspects of COVID in terms of the Ministry of Health, the Minister of Education, so that they are empowered to make certain decisions. Now, initially, the Minister of Public Health shall take the following measures: restrain, segregate, and isolate persons suffering from the disease or who may be likely from exposure to the infection suffer from the disease, to remove to the hospital and provide curative treatment of persons suffering from the disease, and some of the other admonitions we got from the WHO, which I will not go into very much detail. They can facilitate house-to-house visitation and inspection and stuff like that. We have the Minister of Education shall take all measures to control and prevent the spread of COVID in all educational institutions in Guyana. The Minister of Citizenship shall take all measures to control and prevent the spread of COVID in accordance with the immigration laws. The Minister of Finance shall expend from the consolidated funds such sums of money as may be necessary for the effectual carrying out of any or all of the measures in paragraph 1, 2, 3, and 4. All government agencies and local government authorities are urged to render assistance and cooperation to undertake critical, urgent, and appropriate response and measures in a timely manner to curtail and eliminate COVID-19 threat. All citizens, residents, tourists, and members of the private sector are urged in accordance with the law and to comply with the lawful directives and advisories issued by the appropriate government agencies to prevent further transmission of COVID-19 and ensure the safety and well-being of all. And this was gazetted on the 16th of March, 2020. Mm-hmm. Currently, we have five confirmed cases. As it relates to the private sector, well, we have our Georgetown Chamber of Commerce that is operating remotely. I think they have probably but one person in office, but they're doing mostly remote access. For as it relates to our company, I am in contact with our major investor who lives in the U.S., and they're all working remotely, and we're being guided and taking all the necessary precautions. That we're functioning with a skeleton staff. We're also sanitizing clients as they come in, spraying the air, and I'm making sanitization stuff available for clients and the customers that we have. Also frequent washing of hands and stuff like that, not allowing more than 10 or more persons to congregate together. And we've reduced our operations in another geographic part of Guyana, so we're just operating for 4 hours. And in our business continuity plan, we're looking at how we can retain key members of our management team, and they can work remotely so we can still be able to serve our customers as long as possible without contributing to increasing the cases of COVID-19. And those are some of the things. But we have a major challenge because, of course, with not having a government in place, not having budgets, it means that the disbursements and stuff like that will be limited. And so we have a major challenge, and we're hopeful that we can have this resolved pretty soon and good sense prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have schools been closed in Guyana?
Schools have been closed for the next 2 weeks in Guyana. And
just 2 weeks?
Bars and stuff. Voluntarily, some of the bars have been closing, and they're not. But people, there's still a lot of businesses open. So it's not complete adherence, or we didn't have a country shutdown. Our ports closed last night, which would have been the Temeri and Ogle airports. However, they're allowing cargo to come in. Mm-hmm. And persons who are returning.
All persons, all or only citizens?
Citizens, and there will be like special restrictions. Let's say an emergency, let's say a team from CARICOM is coming, they will be allowed to come and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you.
I see is Terry Farrell is on?
Yes, he is.
I wonder if you'd mind sharing with us his perspective in terms of how he sees the impact on the economy and what measures we may take. Because our government has announced certain measures. What's his I would love your perspective, Terry, on what has taken place so far.
I don't know if you want me on video because, so here I am. I think that the measures that they have put in place, I think, are entirely appropriate, because it's one of the, what happens with the situation is that we're really bringing all countries, all economies to a kind of almost complete stop by people staying home. So all economies are going into a kind of maintenance mode, which means that there's a significant decline in economic activity, which then translates into, for a lot of people, it's going to mean those who are living from paycheck to paycheck, it may mean in fact that there is a fairly sudden stop to the income flows. So therefore the measures that have been taken, I think, are appropriate because they've addressed importantly the question of liquidity in the system. Because without those flows taking place in the economy, what will happen is that economic activity is going to become severely compromised. People are going to be severely affected if something is not done. So the measures which we have taken in Trinidad, which are parallel to measures which have been taken in other countries, in the United States, United Kingdom, and so on, has been to try to, number one, give the banking system the wherewithal to provide liquidity to businesses, and also to then to ask businesses to try to accommodate their employees for a period of time during what is being described here in Trinidad as pandemic leave, which might mean that people are staying home for a period of about 14 days. The problem that you have with this issue of the virus, however, is that as it unfolds, the thinking in respect of how long it may last is actually evolving. And that thinking, there's a very interesting and very, I think, very significant brief that was done by Neil Ferguson and his staff at Imperial College in London. In fact, I've just read something that says that Neil Ferguson has himself gone down with the virus. And that's an excellent document, and it talks about the various strategies. But what I think it importantly it says is that in fact, the whole process is going to be somewhat longer than we think. This suppression strategy is the right strategy, but that because of how it is going to be implemented, it means that the economic impact of this could be pretty long. So that whereas Mr. Trump was talking about July, August coming through the system, I think that the current thinking is that it could be somewhat longer than that in terms of the tailing off of the economic impact. So the measures that we have taken here in Trinidad, I presume that other countries, Barbados, Jamaica, Guyana, and so on, will be doing similar kinds of things in order to try to put some liquidity in the system. But the longer it goes on, the ability of both governments and the private sector to be able to sustain that is going to be challenged. We don't have, the United States has $1 trillion that they're putting into the economy. They're handing out checks to all Americans and so on. Our economies don't have the capacity to do that. And in addition to which, because we are small, open, dependent economies, any kind of notion of a fiscal stimulus is going to run into your foreign exchange and your foreign reserves barrier. And we already know that countries like Barbados, even Jamaica, Jamaica has been coming out of its situation, but it has very limited foreign exchange reserves. Trinidad foreign exchange reserves have been declining. We will quickly run into that. So I don't think that we need to overemphasize the seriousness of the situation, but that the measures which we need to take and have announced in Trinidad, and I presume will be announced in other countries in the Caribbean, will be needed to, in fact, sustain the economy and to sustain particularly the vulnerable in society for at least a few weeks or a couple of months.
Thank you very much for that, Terry. It's really unprecedented. For me, the good news in this, and I suppose you always have to look for, as they say, the silver lining, is that the planet has been allowed to breathe a little bit with the reduction in air traffic, and of course factories closing down. I was listening to a Freakonomics broadcast this morning, a podcast, and they were saying that the level of pollution dropped by almost 30% outside of Beijing. So it's rather interesting. I just want to go back to Julie, because you said you have done the working from home. How is the technology working? Because I am sure that wise investors will be looking at Zoom and GoToMeeting and those kinds of stuff, because we can see Zoom works wonderfully well. How are you managing the remote working, Julie, and how is it working for you?
Thanks, Nigel. Absolutely, Zoom. We also use BlueJeans across the group, which is another solution. And then WhatsApp calls, WhatsApp video calls. One of the conversations we had this week is also how do we, because our travel budgets are going to be not used, how do we maybe use some of that in bumping up our technology, better quality speaker phones, better quality headsets for people. Some people, you know, even laptops and working from home. As you can imagine, Massey, we have various businesses, various levels of staff working from home for our gentlemen in our service shops. Ain't gonna happen. Our cashiers, our people in our warehouses. So all of those different things are being figured out. We're also looking at and in the process of wider group-wide communication using an app, so that anyone with a smartphone, even if you don't have an email address, would be able to communicate either to get news from the group, but also to reach out for help. So we're looking at that. The app isn't completely ready, but it's something that I'm pretty passionate about, that if someone needs help, whether it's to do with COVID-19 or our region being prone to hurricane season or civil unrest, depending on situations in different countries, we want to find a way to be able to have anyone get in touch across the group if they need help. And again, that would be then to help them through the local authorities. We're not trying to take the place of local authorities, but support that.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. Kamla, do we want to open it up for questions or comments?
Yes, absolutely, Nigel. In fact, we have quite a number of participants who would have some significant experience, including from TOSL and also a director on Republic Bank. Mr. Shazan Ali, I think his deputy CEO is having a word with him right now about possibly contributing some of his thoughts. So if we can ask him, and of course, any of our participants, they can, I know the technology is a little bit new to many of us. You can raise your hands, which would allow us to see that you would like to share a thought or ask a question or make a comment or so with respect to the panel. So, and yes, Nigel, possibly, let's see if Mr. Shazan would be willing to share his thoughts.
Shazan? I think he's on mute. He looks like he's talking. Shazan?
Hi, Kamla. It's Lisa.
All right. Go ahead, Lisa.
I think we need to help him unmute as well, right? But yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, it's Lisa from TOSL, Deputy CEO. So just to let you know what we're doing here, we have asked people to work from home where they are in the high-risk groups. So we're looking with those at the elderly, those who are who have different health conditions, or kids. We also are using our infrared gun to actually check the temperatures of employees on the compound. We have a questionnaire that we're asking all visitors to fill out as they come on the compound. However, we're also restricting who is coming on the compound at this time. And we have sent out these messages to our customers and clients, advising them as to what we are doing. So these are some of the precautions that we are taking here at TOSL as we continue to monitor the situation. Anybody who we have with any kind of signs or symptoms of a virus, they are required to stay at home and not come into the office. But we're still here to assist the clients and customers as need be. So those are some of the things that we are doing here at TOSL.
Lisa, go ahead, Marla, sorry. And then I'll go back to Lisa after. Go ahead, Marla.
Yeah, one of the things I'm interested in, we're moving towards remote working to help suppress the spread of the virus. From an HR perspective and from a management perspective, how is management assured or comfortable that the level of productivity from staff who's working remotely is being satisfied? Can I get some thoughts from persons who are dealing with that particular issue?
So what we are doing here at TOSL is that we're having call-ins with our various departments via Skype or other means. We have a call-in number we're using, so we're having meetings in the morning and in the afternoon to get updates as to what they're doing, together with them sending us emails, communicating with us via phone. So that's how we are managing it.
Okay, great. I see the PG is on the call. Good morning, Mr. Anicet. How are you? Michael, can you hear us? I'm not sure he's hearing. He's not on mute. Okay, let's Julie, you wanna take the question from Marlon, and then we will get on to Michael after.
Sure, I'll do that, and I'm also seeing Antonia has her hand up.
Okay, good.
I'll do a quick just with regard to productivity and working from home. Again, the because we had various conversations across the HR community,
mm-hmm.
We are erring on the side of caution and containment. And while productivity, we need to be responsible, we are, sort of, let's get people home as much as possible and worry about productivity afterwards.
Good.
The that's one thing. The where I don't have an answer, where I got a question this morning, is someone asking if there's going to be increased electricity bills at home. If there's going to be, you know, because people need to have, maybe they decide that they need to have, for comfort, they're running their air conditioner and we're not, you know, there's additional groceries at home. So that's something that we're going to think about just with regard to, is there a one-off stipend to consider, what is reasonable? We don't have the answer. But again, just stressing, for now, self-isolation. We also had previously started working from home. So for some areas of the business, it's not as difficult. But this whole self-isolation and long-term being away from work is causing some maybe more emotional challenges for people as they don't have that office interaction. So having the group calls, having the conversations, checking and being proactive, and again on the emotional need. So that's how we're looking at it.
Okay, great. Thank you. Antonia, you had you wanted to raise something. Can you unmute yourself?
Yeah. A couple of things I just wanted to share. In terms of the work from home, we actually had, well, I'm now working as a consultant, but in my last job, we actually had a serious air quality issue. And so that company had set up, we had taken advantage of the existing VPN and actually had set the staff to allow them to work and equip them to work from home on days that they did not have, the air quality was bad or people were ill, because my entire team had respiratory issues. Now that we have this crisis, I've heard that the company now has expanded that facility to the entire company so that it has been easier for them to quickly get themselves organized to facilitate working from home for the entire company. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed with my own clients that a lot of people are not aware of the collaborative tools now available on Microsoft that would allow you to continue working very productively using Teams. There's another piece of software called, another app called Slack that allows
Slack,
you to
put
all your normal productivity tools into that workspace. Mm-hmm. So I want to build on something you said in the introduction about looking for the opportunities, the role of the board in looking for the opportunities in the crisis. This is a conversation I have been having with my clients, because the reality is a lot of companies would at this point in time have been working on normal strategic plans and their budgets for next year, etc. And this crisis would have intervened. And what we should not get lost in the conversation is long-term consequences of this black swan. And the natural response is to focus on the immediate crisis. That we really should not let go of the long-term view. There are ways to plan effectively, even with high uncertainty, where you can systematically go through what you know from what you don't know, what you need to find out, which will allow you to self-discover the implications of this black swan for you and prepare for that. Mm-hmm. If you do that kind of analysis, it will allow you to look at where you need to refocus your existing strategic plan, where you now need to come up with new scenarios for the what-ifs. The disruption is a short-term or long-term. We have to look for new sources of supply so that you don't have to wait till the crisis is over to figure out what we need to be doing, how we need to change, how we need to reconfigure our business to work with our customers and our employees. Mm-hmm. So that's what I wanted to share.
Thank you very much. Mr. Yep. Michael Aniset, how are you? Can you unmute yourself? You're on mute.
So there is a little button right next to where the video icon is at the bottom of your screen, Mr. Aniset. It should be the one on your
extreme. Yeah, he's off now. Good. Michael, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Pleasant morning. You know, I had some challenges with the Cabo Star, and that's the reason why I'm now logging in.
We heard. Right, no worries. Thank you for being here.
Okay. The pleasure is mine. And thanks for the invitation.
Mm-hmm. What are you seeing from your end? Because one of the things we were saying this morning is that it is important for boards to work with management to ensure that employees are taken care of through this process. It's a difficult process, but it has to be a partnership going forward and a real partnership. So we would love to hear your perspective.
Yeah, well, I share that perspective. I share that view because this is an issue that is not a management issue. It's not a union issue. It is not a government issue. We are all in this together. So the issue of collaboration and inclusiveness must be part of the discussions and the narrative that we are having. And I believe that if we put our collective wisdom together, if we follow the protocols that is necessary, that we'll be able to, you know, make some gains that will be in the best interest of Trinidad and Tobago. So the question, because what we have been doing from the national trade union perspective, we have been engaging companies where we have RMU, which is recognized majority union status. We have been engaging them on an individual basis in the context of how do we address this particular issue. And what I've been able to discover is that each company has their own individualized and specifics. And therefore, we need to pay attention to that reality as we move forward and as we try to find a policy that speaks to this whole question of governance in the health sector.
So Nigel, I think a very interesting thing Mr. Anissa just said is the fact that there is no one response. The fact that for different businesses, you have to come up with different strategies also. I just wonder, in one instance, the fact that, you know, everyone basically has had to close their borders, has there immediately been a direct impact on companies? And secondly, we do have some companies whereas there are companies that can send their employees to work from home. Basically, a lot of them have actually had to ramp up their businesses, their business activity. For instance, a lot of the wholesalers who are providing the bleach and other sanitary supplies, as well as our supermarkets who are opening longer hours, our pharmacies and so. So are there specific guidelines that we should be looking at for those companies to ensure that those employees too are also taken care of?
Yeah, well, obviously, the question of employees being taken care of becomes absolutely necessary. And more so, in my humble view, in the context of those employees who are in the front line. Mm-hmm. And it's not only the healthcare workers who are in the front line. For example, the bus drivers, mm-hmm. they are in the front line. For example, the port workers mm-hmm. who have to be on the port to ensure that the very containers and goods and services get sold to the general public. They are in the front line. So we have to understand what are the realities that we are facing. Because from where I sit, sometimes we pay specific attention to what is the tradition. And everyone speaks about the healthcare workers, which I support, but it doesn't extend to the other groups of people who are making, you know, sterling contributions, given the kind of work that they are doing. For example, I got a call today from a worker who works with the health department, but that person is a private worker and the responsibilities, one of the responsibility is to ensure then that they wipe down all the tables and sanitize. And then they were asking about gears. Are we just going to wipe it down with our gloves? And that is it. And the manager for the particular department believed that was offensive. And those are the kinds of issues that I think that we have to address. It may appear simple, but it has a lot of meaning in the context of how we really address this particular issue. Because any letter in any form, shape, or fashion in any department, in any industry, can cause issues for Trinidad and Tobago. And the point that I want to make is, how do we zero in on that? How do we capture that? How do we form a policy that speaks to those kinds of reality? And I think we should have a conversation.
You want to unmute, Michael? Michael, you're on mute. Michael, PG, you're muted. You may have muted yourself. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's our webinar.
Go ahead, Michael. We missed some of what you said.
Yeah, because what is happening? Well, you know, with this thing on the poor, the news media, the press, everybody just falling. You know, yep. Fingers. All right.
Yes.
All right. So that the point that I was making is, how do we capture a policy from where we sit that speaks to those realities, right? That may fall through the crack because we are not paying attention to those categories of workers who may appear to be insignificant in the stream of things, but who are making the kind of contribution that is necessary to ensure, that we have a safe industry. And I made the reference to the cleaner.
Right.
In the office. Yeah. Right. People are not paying attention to those groups of people, but they are critical. They are critical. Clearly. And therefore, how do we address that particular issue? Yeah. Another example, I was taken aback that the port was not testing none of the passengers, from when they embark and when they disembark. That is a protocol that we have in the maritime sector. Unfortunately, the port didn't implement that. And now there's a lot of issues from the workforce, and quite rightly so. And we may have a situation where the vessel may not sail as a consequence of the failure of the port to understand and to practice what has been enshrined in the maritime sector. So you know, the point I'm making there are so many different sectors that needs to be looked at so that we could drill down on what is the correct protocol specific to that particular sector.
Okay, thank you. Julie, you mentioned, and I like what you said, that this thing about productivity is let's put that on the side for now and focus on ensuring that we deal with this thing and stop this thing. Given what Michael has said, how is Massey making sure that they are listening? I mean, I'm talking about your management now. How are they? How is the board communicating to management so that management knows that they have the freedom to act in the best interest of the team and the customer? Share that with us.
All right, Nigel, just before Julie responds to your question, I just want to take note, it's now 11:02.
Yeah, we can go on for a few minutes. Julie?
Thank you. So again, this comes back to the message of each team leader, each supervisor, each manager, and reinforcing their empowerment to make the decisions. So first of all, the productivity point and being responsible and not having a blanket right answer for every situation. Having our values. I particularly liked a lot of the messaging. I know this is across the region. We're having this conversation, hearing Honorable Prime Minister Mia Mottley, hearing our Honorable Prime Minister, Dr. Keith Rowley yesterday, talking of things like our fundamental values, treat others like the golden rule, treat others like how you yourself would like to be treated. Mm-hmm. So these are some of the conversations with regard to our values. The point about we also have a responsibility for things to continue working and how can we do that fairly? So I have an example. Our employees or our retirees, they need to be able to continue to put in their claims, their health mm-hmm. insurance claims. So we need to make sure we have a roster. We might have limited hours and a skeleton staff. We have forms if someone is ill and we understand that this virus can live on surfaces for mm-hmm. hours or days. How is that being sanitized? How are we taking precautions to put things in places and cleaning responsibly? I just can't stress enough that there isn't a right answer.
No.
And we are taking each situation individually mm-hmm. and we are giving our management, our supervisors, our people as much latitude to make responsible decisions and to trust them. Mm-hmm. And that's our mantra. And yet at the same time, as leaders, we are being looked at for some decisions because people are seeking and searching for direction. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, we are releasing the control and saying, what do you think? What do you think is the best thing to do here? What's going to be best for your people? How are we going to make sure we continue with critical services? Yet at the same time, when they don't know what to do, saying, right, I understand all of this. Let's give this a shot. And putting your neck on the line to say, mm-hmm. right, let's go in this direction. So I hope I'm not coming across as vague. I'm really just saying that we are taking each situation differently. And a common thread is falling on our values, mm-hmm. whether it's our national values, our regional values, our corporate values, and really mm-hmm. trying to trust and release control responsibly for our people and for the region.
No, I don't think you're being vague at all. We are in an unprecedented situation here. We are going to be dealing with significant adverse conditions going forward. And I think it's important that, as you said, the core values guide us. The people first, whether they are employees or customers, and making sure that we don't have a short-term view of the situation. In other words, for me, the wrong decision would be to send everybody home if you can't open your shop. There has to be a balance there somewhere that says, I'm going to talk to the banker. This may take 2-3 months. We in for a rough time, but we're doing this together. And having that kind of long-term or longer-term approach to the situation. As I said before, the good news is that China did not report any domestically originated cases today. And that is good news. And so if we contain this properly, we will be able to come through it, but I suspect it's going to get a lot worse before it starts to get better. And that we're going to survive working together as opposed to seeking sectoral interests. We have to work together, and leadership has to inspire both the team members and again protect them from all this fake news and all this and all the junk, and make sure that and people will know if we work with them and for them together to serve our customers, we will get through this, maybe not unscathed, but we will survive this and then be able to thrive. So for me, that's where we need to focus. And I look forward to working with all of you as we navigate these uncharted waters. Michael, do you have any parting words for us?
Yeah, well, let me concur with what you are saying, because one of the challenges that I had as the President General of the Seamen Waterfront Workers Trade Union, and also as the General Secretary of NATOC, there was this feeling by many of the workers and them that we should close down the country for 2 weeks. Because this thing is serious, and I guess this is fed by, as you rightly said, the fake news, the disinformation, and the misinformation. And as I had to point out to a group of workers yesterday, because I had to go to that particular company because they were demanding that the company shut down, and the company is a critical company in the stream of things, the economic stream of things. And I said, all right, let us take your argument, all right, to a full point. Well, let us send all the police home, the fire people home, the nurses home, the doctors home, the port workers. And I think after a while they got the message, because there are some essential services that has to remain open. The question is how we regulate it as a body. And that requires, as you rightly say, leadership to ensure that we protect those groups of workers, so that they will know that, yes, they are making a valuable contribution. As we say, they are in an essential industry, and therefore we need to work. But at the same time, we have your interests at heart, and we do everything to ensure that the healthcare and the virus and the necessary protocols are put in place to ensure that you, and by extension, your family, is properly taken care of. And I honestly believe that if we take that collective approach, if we sing from the same hymn sheet, right, that we will get there. I am confident that we have the ability, all right, to get there. And the issue to me is we need leadership from all the leaders and them. It is not just from one person, but from every leader in Trinidad and Tobago, and I dare say across the Caribbean region, because it is my view that the Caribbean should be involved in this, and not only Trinidad and Tobago. Okay, that's how I see it.
Thank you very much. Kamla, you want to wrap up?
Yes, thank you very much, Nigel. I really appreciate the participation of everyone in today, what is our first online session. I think a critical thing that came out of this discussion is the fact that there is such great need for boards to remain calm, for boards to be the calm in the uncharted waters, because our management teams are dealing with tremendous crisis and they're under a lot of pressure. And what if I understood Mr. Anisad properly just now, this is not the time for there to be letters of warning to any staff members. Therefore, as frustrated and as upset and as challenging as some of these situations are for us, we need to understand, as both Nigel and Dr. Farrell pointed out, we really don't know how long this situation will persist. Therefore, you know, the message is clear that we all need to be supportive, but most particularly the boards who are there to provide support to their management in terms of crisis. We need to ensure that you understand that moderator role. Be calm, you know, and let's all try our best to ensure that we come out of this successfully. Thank you all very much. I truly appreciate everyone's participation. Thank you very much, Chair. Nigel is such a tremendous support and help to me in ensuring that, you know, we are able to fulfill our role here at CCGI to help keep the region together, to help us all ensure that we are able to respond in a positive fashion. I apologize, we were not able to get the Jamaica Chamber on. I know it is because the executive team of the chamber had their meeting this morning. So chances are they were not able to wrap up in time to be able to join us, because the situation is really unfolding for everyone in different ways. And we are all just doing our best to ensure that we cope. I really appreciate those of you who have said great session.
Yeah. So one thing I would let you all know that we will get through this and we will come out even better. I was actually in Hong Kong for SARS and lived through SARS. So let's be calm, be cool, and think about each other and work with each other. Thank you. Have a great day.